For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The home team.
And here we go.
All right, so kicking into hour number two. It is the home team, Chris and Jeff till 7. Couple more hours with you, and then exciting Atlanta Braves baseball. Hopefully more exciting than last night's game. Braves yesterday at this time were good. Today they stink.
Now time to make some big changes.
Right.
Fire the bat boys and the GM and the manager, everybody. Yeah. Yeah, if you're going to lose, you might as well get crushed. Easy to flush.
Well, now it's like, am I back to not liking Julio?
Well,
he
has been
going good. Now he's...
Again, here's the thing. It was a perfect scenario. You're going up against the ace. Julio had been going good. You know it had to end at some point, so you might as well just have it be the perfect storm and flush out everything. By the way, I'll look at some scores real quick. As we said, Louisville beat Auburn 5-3. It's Vandy 6, Mississippi State nothing. Texas Tech and FSU will play an elimination game tonight. Some day baseball. The Nationals did beat the Phillies 6-2, so that helps Atlanta. The Yankees beat the Rays 12-1, and the Reds beat the Astros 3-2.
Yeah, the Reds swept that series.
Yeah, isn't that something? They used to be in the same division.
They were,
they're
yes.
They're now in different leagues.
Now they're in complete – that's an interleague series.
Yes, it is.
But you, so you think the Phillies, they had not played since losing to Atlanta Sunday 15-1 because they rained out Monday and rained out again last night. So I guess they're trying to squeeze – they're doing the doubleheader today and then play again tomorrow. So three games in 2 days to try and make everything up. Although – even that one, it was a four. I believe it was supposed to be a four-game series. So, I guess they're still going to have to make one up at some point. I don't think they're playing a doubleheader tomorrow, because it's tomorrow supposed to be getaway day. You know.
Well, and that absolutely eats up your pitching too when you're trying to squeeze it. When you get in those spots where you're using, I guess that's how Touki Toussaint came in when you're playing 6 games in 5 days.
Yeah.
Did the Braves have a deal last year where they played something like?
Yeah,
20 games in 19 days or just something ridiculous.
Well, there was a – because they had a bunch of rainouts in like early on in the season, there was a stretch in August to – from August to September at some point last year where it was like 49 games in 50 days
yeah.
or something.
And
I don't remember the exact count.
There were two or three doubleheaders in there, if memory serves.
Yeah. I don't remember the exact count, but, yeah, the Braves had a stretch last year where they just – they ended up – they didn't have any off days because they just had they had all these makeup games. So, yeah, they played a doubleheader on August 13th. And it looks like they played one on August 7th and one on August 13th. So there were two. They played two doubleheaders in a week and just kept going right along. I think it was, yeah, they had a day off August 6th. So from August 7th all the way to – yeah, or late August to sometime in September. I don't know, but something like that happened. Moving on to the 5 at 5 now, brought to you by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution. Jeff, speaking of the Nationals, we referenced this last hour. Max Scherzer, who is, I believe, still scheduled to pitch tonight's game for Washington, despite the fact that he broke his nose yesterday taking batting practice, the ball just ricocheted right off the bat, hit him right in the face, and his nose was broken. Jeff, the question is, which is worse, the broken nose or the fact that that was actually being recorded and there is video of him breaking his nose in that manner?
Oh, man, that's rough. And I've seen that every now and then when you see the bunt, it just pops right back up and catches you on the beak. But I'm sure there was a little bit of embarrassment there. It does happen. But, yeah, having it filmed like that probably wasn't great.
No, that'd have been more embarrassing, everybody
yeah.
seeing. Because it was, like, even weird the way he was – it didn't seem like he was really committed to the bunt because he was just in a cage, you know, it was BP. Just sort of like had the bat stuck out there.
Yeah. So it's one of the, he probably wasn't even really trying that hard.
Yeah, he was just messing around. But I don't know, maybe like, maybe he does, he need to practice bunting? I guess he does every now and then.
No, for sure. No, you got to do it. Here's the thing, though. And these guys, yeah, they're trying. They want to win. They need a spark to give them a chance because, Chris, as you often like to point out, these guys are human beings too. And they're probably thinking, we ain't winning this thing this year. I know it's only June, but come on.
No, they're getting to a point. I mean, by the end of this month, these teams are going to have to make up their mind as to whether or not they're a factor or not. Oddly enough, with the Mets, after winning last night, the Mets are only 3 games below 500. The Nationals are sitting 5 below 500. But, I mean, you're probably getting to the next – within the next 2 weeks, if you're the Mets or the Nationals, you probably need to figure you need to go on some little bit of a run. Otherwise, it's going to officially be a two-team race in the East between the Braves and the Phillies.
Yeah, I think we're almost – to that point now. And Washington, you know, they might be holding out, and maybe the Mets, but it's one of those deals. They'd really have to go on a run like the Braves just went on just to put themselves in contention. And that's, again, these guys are making good money. It's a long season. They're realists too. It's a long shot. There's a reason there have been very few, you know, 9, 10, 11-game comebacks, even when a team's down that many games in, like, June.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen often.
Well, the Mets, I'm seeing, they go to Wrigley Field after tonight's game. And then they do go to Philadelphia next week. And then Atlanta comes to them. And then they play the Phillies again right before the All-Star break. So that's 7, 10, that's 11 more games against teams in the NL East. So, you know, by the time the All-Star break rolls around, yeah, I think we'll have a pretty good idea of whether or not anyone else in the division is a factor other than the Braves or the Phillies. And the way the Phillies are going right now, heck, maybe the Braves could just go ahead and put them away. By the All-Star break, Atlanta could have it all wrapped up.
Well, I think if Atlanta playing all these division games, and what did you say, Chris, is it all of them except the Cubs leading up to the break?
Yeah, they go to the Cubs next Monday through Thursday, and then other than that, it's because they're going to Washington this weekend. Then they go to the Cubs next week, and then they got then they go to the Mets, and then the Phillies come to Atlanta, and the Marlins come to Atlanta right before the All-Star break. So it's nothing but NL East.
I think if Atlanta could just hold the lead where it is, they're in great shape because you've bitten off a big chunk of division games. If they increase it at all, and especially if they get it like the 5-6 game margin, again, anything can happen. You can have an 0-7 week in September, and second place could go 7-0. That's happened.
Sure.
But realistically, you put yourself in a position, and the longer you can extend that lead in first place, and especially when you're beating division foes, it's eating up games on both ends.
Well, DeGrom slowed the bats down last night after they had been cooking. And, you know, you hope like tomorrow's off day doesn't maybe do that. Or even if the Braves are still somewhat humming heading into the All-Star break, then you're just kind of like almost wishing you didn't have those 4 days off. Just keep going and plugging right along. Because then right after the break, you got a little road trip where they have to go back out west to San Diego and then they go to the Brewers. So got 6 straight on the road following the break. All right, moving on in the 5 at 5. Jeff, we talked quite a bit during the offseason where we attempt to predict championship games,
yep,
SEC title games, and the teams that will be in it. But let's twist it, and let's predict our patented undercard game, which last year would have been Auburn and South Carolina, right?
Yes, because it doesn't have to be necessarily the worst team in each division. I think it's the two most disappointed fan bases. And just a quick background on that, a friend of mine from Ole Miss back in 2010, I thought we had a chance to have a really good year that year, you know, go 9-3, 10-2 in the regular season. And we wind up going 6-6 and lost to Central Florida. But when we were sitting there at 6-6, thank God we had beaten Tech. I was talking to my friend. She had held out high hopes for Hotty Toddy, and they had an equally disappointing season. So, you know, we should just meet each other at noon, Georgia and Ole Miss, prior to the South Carolina-Auburn SEC title game. And that's the undercard, two most disappointed fan bases in the SEC. And from that, a great idea was born. So, Brayman, I do this for the SEC. We'll do it for other leagues. And, of course, every year we do it for the Super Bowl as well.
So, are we predicting a Georgia-Alabama SEC title game again?
Well, I sure hope you're half right with the Bulldogs.
Well, because here's the thing. If one of those teams isn't in the SEC title game, then one of those teams will be in the undercard game, right?
Well, Alabama wasn't 2 years ago. They were happy because, to quote a Bama fan who told me back during basketball season, we didn't need to go to – so just like in 2011, they got that extra week's rest there.
They had just lost what should have been one of the worst losses in school history.
But it's like, nah, that just gave us an extra week
it
off.
Did.
One less game to play.
That should have been – that should go down in history as one of their all-time worst losses. And now
that's
just
why the playoff stinks.
Doesn't even matter.
I mean, that – I thought it might take at least 7-8 years to have something like that happen. But, no, it was in – what, year four?
Yeah, they were undefeated and lost the Iron Bowl.
Yeah, that should have been their worst loss in history.
Yeah, it kept them out of the SEC tie. There was like, they're, you're
yeah,
not, you just
it helped them.
You just won your first 11 games, and now you're not even, you don't have any, you can't even win the SEC title.
No, it helped them.
All right, so last year, I think it would have been Auburn and South Carolina.
Because Auburn was preseason top 10.
South Carolina was coming off.
Arkansas stunk. But they had a new coach. They knew they were going to stink.
Yeah, that was that. There were so many new coaches, even teams that had bad seasons. You had new coaches. South Carolina had beaten Michigan in the Outback Bowl the year before.
They won nine games. They were feeling good.
They end up where they're headed to the Belk Bowl, and they ended up getting shut out in that game.
Yes.
By Virginia. So let's predict it. Teams that are going to be in the undercard of the SEC title game, disappointing, let down fan bases.
Well, I'll tell you what, if the Gators lose to the Dogs in one of the in-state schools and pull an 8-4, I think they could be a candidate. South Carolina could be in the hunt. And I'm telling you, Chris, Tennessee, you look at that schedule, they're expecting a big jump this year. I think Missouri's got high expectations.
If Tennessee gets to a bowl game and beats – maybe not even necessarily both of them. Let's say they at least beat Vandy this year, even if they lose again to Missouri, because this year they do play Missouri and Columbia.
Good, yeah.
Then, I mean, Tennessee, they have to be satisfied with that.
All right, so let's say they lose to the Dogs, the Gators, Bama, and Missouri. Again, are they going to win all these 50-50 games? If they go 8-4, I think they're happy.
But they beat
with that.
Vandy, and they're going to a bowl game.
Yeah, for sure. South Carolina, that schedule's so tough. And like we said, hey, they could pull off an upset. They might come here and win. But you find me more than 7 wins on that schedule.
Well,
it's hard to
do. Sure. And that's where you have to gauge, you know, how much South Carolina fans have reasonable, realistic right. expectations at the beginning of the year based on the fact that they do, on their schedule right now, the 3 best teams in the country.
And then you got Kentucky. They just had their best year since 1977. They lost their best players. They don't have any expectations. Vanderbilt, no. So I think
Florida's a top contender.
I think Florida's a top contender. Now, listen, they could have a very good year with that schedule, go 9-3 and get a lot of big wins and not go to Atlanta in the SEC title game. But I would think Florida would be a contender there.
Yeah, with the connection being that, like South Carolina the year before, they had won a bowl game against Michigan.
Yep.
Had a good year. Won a major bowl game against Michigan, and that has produced loftier, heightened expectations here. And now Mullen's year two.
And keeping in mind, after they lost to Georgia 36-17 and Missouri 38-17, they were losing to South Carolina 31-14. Came back and won that game. They beat Idaho. And the worst Florida State team in 35 years, and then Michigan. So they did play very well, not diminishing what the Gators did, winning those last 4 games. That was not a murderer's row that they ran through, though. So I think that is important to keep in mind.
Yeah. No, I think Florida would be my pick.
Is it real? I mean, could they pull an 8-4 this year?
Absolutely, they could. I'd take their under 9.5.
Whew. That's lofty.
I would take even just under 9 with thinking, like, they're not going to go over 9. They're not going to go 10-2. So the worst you're going to get is a push if they did go 9-3. But I think they're going to go 0-2 against the West. I don't think they're beating Auburn. I mean, they get to play Auburn at home, and they play Auburn post-Towson.
Yeah,
I just think Auburn's better than they are. Like, that's the – when you think – right now, Florida's got O-line issues. Now, that game's October 5th, so you've got a whole month. That'll be five games into the season that maybe they've worked out some of those O-line issues. But Auburn arguably has got the best defensive line in the country. Now, like I said on Friday, for me, the best matchup of the year, unit versus unit, not team versus team, but boiling it down specifically to one unit versus the other.
Mm-hmm.
The WrestleMania 3 main event, Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant.
Is it November 16th?
It is November the 2nd. Georgia's offensive line against Auburn's defensive line. That's the matchup of the year in college football.
I'm with you. Georgia's O-line against the Auburn D-line.
And that's like – that's minimum a half dozen future first-round NFL draft picks.
Indeed.
Banging heads.
Indeed. 100%.
So I think that's a – that's not a good matchup for Florida. They're lucky. The Gators are lucky it's deep into the season because they could sort some stuff out on their O-line. But if they played early, they wouldn't be able to block Auburn. They're not going to win at LSU. They could easily lose at South Carolina on the tail end of both of those games.
Well, the thing that helps Florida there, too, for that Auburn game, Bramer, is that, like you said, they're coming off a game against Towson. And that's a third of three straight for Auburn at A&M, Mississippi State at Florida.
Yeah.
So it's a tougher stretch here for Auburn.
I think South Carolina gets them in a good spot, though. In Columbia, coming off those two games. So I think Florida's got a good chance at 1-2 of those middle two games. Then they lose to us again. So there's your third loss.
Mizzou.
And that's, yeah, and then they get Vandy at home.
I'll win that one, probably.
And, you know, they better hope Florida State doesn't get better in Willie Taggart's second season. Florida, I mean, they were terrible last year, though.
Terrible.
So they'd have a whole lot of getting better to do, but. Yeah.
Terrible.
I mean, Florida's not doing better than 9-3.
I'm with you. All right, so if the Gators are leading contender there, and if Georgia doesn't go to Atlanta. Now, again, if we went 11-1 and Missouri beat us by 1 point and the appeal got upheld and Missouri went 11-1 and they went, it's like, well, you know what?
We're in the undercard then.
Yeah, but still, I mean, you know, we beat Tech, we beat Florida, beat Notre Dame, beat Auburn, beat Tennessee, beat South Carolina.
Yeah, but we lost at home to Missouri.
Anyways, it'd be hard to gripe about that.
We'd
find a way. From the West, are the LSU expectations up there, putting them in that spot? I think their schedule's manageable. I think it sets up nicely for them, with the exception of that game in Starkville between Florida and Auburn. I think that's a tricky, tricky spot for them.
Well, and a weird game, too, is going to be week two at Texas, where at the moment they are favored, which means they're going to lose.
The other contender, Chris, and I'm not trying to jinx it because we got to play them, that A&M, they're thinking year two, great. That schedule is brutal. I mean, they go to Clemson, go to Georgia, go to LSU, get Bama at home. And, again, they got the Mississippi schools there after Bama. They go at Ole Miss and home state. Those are not gimmies for them, nor is Auburn at home. I think the folks in College Station are thinking, you know, a Johnny Football 10-2 type year. And I just – they might be a top 10 team and go 8-4.
Yeah. Like, that's what I thought about Auburn last year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe not necessarily top 10, but for, you know, and I get, like, Auburn fans should have been disappointed because they've got, you know, they blew that game to LSU and they lost at home to Tennessee. But, like, Auburn wasn't bad last year.
No.
They just failed to live up to preseason hype. And they were a team in the SEC West, and that's how Texas A&M might be. Like, the reality of A&M is, yeah, they might be a top 10 team, but their record won't show it because they, like South Carolina, play the three best teams in the country. I think Mississippi State is a candidate for this with that Joe Moorhead. Because State fans, Mullen was great there. They lost him. They had three players on that defense taken in the first round of the NFL draft. That ain't something Mississippi State could just easily replace. Their offense was not good last year. That whole team was propped up by the defense, and nothing sums that up more than the fact that Mississippi State was 11-1 to the under last year. Actually, it was 10-1 to the under. So, if you know, you watch three of their defenders get drafted in the first round, and then you go back and look that all their games were going under last season, Mississippi State's going to have a hard time.
Could they be 4-0 coming out of Lou Lafayette, Southern Miss, K-State, Kentucky? All, well, Louisiana games in the Superdome, but – None of them road games. Could they be 4-0?
Sure. Okay. They better be.
They better be. But let's even give it up. So let's say they split at Auburn and Tennessee. They give them 5-1. Then they lose to LSU 5-2. Let's say they lose at A&M 5-3, beat Arkansas 6-3. They get Bama 6-4, beat Abilene Christian 7-4. Come down the Egg Bowl. Yeah, if they lose to Ole Miss and go 7-5. But, again, that's giving them wins over Southern Miss, Kansas State, and Kentucky. Not automatic, and also giving them a win at Jordan-Hare and at Neyland State, or one of the other, at Jordan-Hare or Neyland Stadium.
Right.
Because they do catch Auburn and Tennessee at good spots.
Well, especially Tennessee, because Tennessee's got us, and then Mississippi State is off.
Yes, and they play Alabama the week after that.
Right, and they catch Auburn the week after Auburn's at A&M. But that game is, yeah, that game is in Jordan-Hare.
I just, my answer to all this, Chris, I would say Florida and A&M.
Okay.
Jimbo Fisher.
Mullen and Fisher.
Meeting the Gators again.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, with Florida, if they don't have a great year, I mean, the way he's been running his mouth.
Well, yeah, and as we even discussed yesterday, at least there's, you know, someone out there on a message board somewhere that maybe his fans aren't so behind all of his trash talking, since he's not backing it up with constant entrance into the transfer portal and other guys that are canceling visits or just decommitting and stuff. So it's coming back to bite him big time, not just with us, but his fan base too. All right, moving on to the 5 at 5. We discussed last hour all of the first-year head coaches in Power 5 conferences this year. And keeping in mind that expectations are different at different places, which one of those coaches has the most successful debut season?
Well, I think Ryan Day at Ohio State would be the best bet to put up a big win total. I'm with you, though. I think what might be the best fit there, and if we look back on this group of first-year coaches in 4 or 5 years, might be Neil Brown at West Virginia.
Yeah. You know, a division that's there for the taking – is that one that Miami plays with
no
Manny
doubt.
Diaz. And, like, the Tate Martell is
– yeah, he's a little kooky, but
– right, but he was
– he's good.
Yeah, I mean, he was a major recruit.
I think with Miami as well, Manny Diaz, he had some ups and downs as a DC. I think he might be one of those guys who's a better head coach, and this is home for him. And I think at the very least – and, again, just going through the 247 recruiting, crystal ball and all that, Miami's in play for some guys. In fact, they got a big, giant offensive lineman committed to them a couple of weeks ago, and that was a position where they had struggled recruiting the last couple of years. And he's got his quarterback, again, who went through great hardship, so is now eligible to play this year. His hardship was that Justin Fields transferred in there. And, I think – and what has Miami not been in the ACC title game? Is that right?
No, they were there.
They got blown out by Clemson,
yes,
right?
Yes, they were there.
But they've never won it.
Yeah, but Rick took them there
two years
ago.
They got smoked by Clemson.
Yeah.
So
that's the only time they've been in it, though.
Yes, that could be a good fit. Hopefully Jeff Collins is a horrible fit at Tech. He's been running his mouth a lot, too. I'm telling you, there's some Tech people coming out of the woodwork, even in Athens. I'm seeing some.
Well, I know they had an event here.
I'm seeing some GT stickers. I think they're getting a little cocky. I mean, and I know they're
going 4-8.
I hope we're one of the eight.
Oh, of course.
And I know we'll
That'd be bad if they went 4-8 and we were one of the four.
I know we'll be in the midst of a brutal schedule stretch, but if we've got the chance, we need to drop the hammer. I'm talking like if it's 35-3, we put in Stetson Bennett, we're full on running the offense.
No, I'm all for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt like last year, and I get it, you know, you're up. We all know what was looming the next week. It was 45-7. I hate that they got those two touchdowns in the fourth quarter. We could have easily gotten in the 50s in that game.
Paul Johnson, just a guy who scored the last 14 points in the Georgia series.
Yep.
Bonus question, Jeff. Jim McElwain, Hugh Freeze.
Ooh.
McElwain now at Central Michigan, Hugh Freeze at Liberty.
Which place has a better chance for a scandal?
Which one of those guys gets out of there first?
Hugh Freeze.
Freeze out of Liberty?
I think so.
Wow. I mean, he's got more baggage than McElwain.
I know.
I mean, he left a place with NCAA sanctions.
No, he might not get out on his own accord.
Oh, I'm talking about like actually gets out of there and maybe gets hired again.
Freeze is the better coach with more baggage.
So it's the answer's him then.
Somebody will look past it, right?
Of course they will, yeah.
I mean, Bobby Petrino got rehired at a place.
You know what would be funny is if Mississippi State hired him.
That's a good call.
Yeah.
We've thoroughly vetted him. That would be cleaned up his act.
That would be classic Southeastern Conference. Because it just means more.
Because here's the deal. Like, who in the world could hire McElwain now? I mean, what Big Ten school? Like, nobody in the SEC could hire
him. Well, I don't even think he's a good coach, though. Freeze, at least, I do think is a good coach.
I agree.
But, you know, McElwain does have baggage, too. He lied about his players getting death threats.
And lied. And then, those were when they wore those awful. No, those were a tribute to the troops. Like, wait a minute. No, they weren't.
Yeah. Oh, and that naked shark.
He's beating a man with a rod. Oh, that was a different
thing. That was a different guy. All right, so there's the 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.